Bridget asked a very good question. Some practitioners teach that you should eat every few hours to maintain stable blood sugar. Why the different theories? I personally think that that theory is becoming debunked by all the research there is on leptin resistance and insulin resistance. So the theory is that because it's like a Band-Aid. Eating every few hours is like a Band-Aid. It doesn't fix the problem. What happens is that the person has a problem with insulin dysregulation and blood sugar dysregulation. So you don't allow them to go too low because they're overproducing insulin. You just feed them again. The opposite theory is that when insulin is in your system, right, you're in the fed mode. When insulin is in there, you are not burning fat, and you are creating all this havoc in your system. When you eat every 2 to 3 hours, you're keeping a steady supply of insulin every waking moment. There's no opportunity to burn fat. Your growth hormone levels are blunted. Your thyroid hormone levels are blunted. And you're a slave to the kitchen because you can't go anywhere without eating. So what I like to do is work with people to just gradually move the space between their meals while we restore function, while we get them on the nutrients like chromium and magnesium and their DHA and zinc and B vitamins and the real whole foods, high nutrient dense diet filled with those nutrients, so that they can repair. And I have had people who are resistant weight loss people, could not lose weight for the life of them, and started to just space their meals out without changing much of anything about the way they ate, and suddenly the weight drops. I hear it all the time. I've been eating every 2 hours because I was told to, but it doesn't seem to be working. They stop that, they spread the meals out, and they start to drop weight. We are not intended to be eating factories. We are not intended to be eating all the time. We need to be in between where we can actually then go and do repair and growth and other work. So that's my feeling. I think more and more, there's so much evidence and so much research. In the Before Be Gone program, I have, I think it was the hormone module, which is module 4, I have a paper I wrote, an 18-page paper, all about intermittent fasting and meal spacing and all the research that's been done on that. It's huge. So that's my feeling. I am definitely not in that camp. The feedback at the pituitary influenced by both T3 and T4. My understanding is that it is influenced by T3. And then would you address the relationship between estrogen and thyroid hormone? Yes, I can do that. So when you have, let me make sure I don't tell you this backwards. I'm going to flip to my little cheat sheet of remembering which way it goes. So there's a couple of ways that they're influenced. One is just that the when the thyroid is low, the estrogens are shifted to the 16 pathways, which is I think I'm going to wait to do this till we do our estrogen progesterone, our sex hormone thing, because I want to show you those pathways first, and I don't want to go off on a tangent and kind of get everybody confused. But it has to do with the pathways, the 216 pathways there. But the other piece is the effect on thyroglobulin and the deiodination, I guess, or not iodination, but the when you take the thyroid off the protein carrier, and it's either increased, that's what I'm looking for right now, is either increase or decrease. Let me get back to you on which, here it is, thyroid under conversion. Here we go. Okay, so the thyroid binding globulins, a decrease in the thyroid binding globulins can be caused by testosterone, which means that you have more, you have an overconversion from the protein bound to the free bound. When you have estrogen dominance, meaning too much estrogen, you have an underconversion so that you have less of the active hormone when you have estrogen dominance. So people who are doing a lot of plastic things where there's a lot of estrogens getting in there, have a lot of dental fillings, eating a lot of meats where the estrogen there is too high, then the estrogen dominance will interfere with the binding and it will have an underconversion. It keeps it stuck to the binding. It also interferes with the conversion from T4 to T3. So good question. Good question. All right. Sorry, I always get those backwards, and I wanted to make sure I gave it to you right. But as far as the other effects of estrogen and testosterone, we'll go through that when we do our sex hormone one module, because there's this beautiful pathway and chart that I want to show you with the threes and the fours and the twos and the fours and the 16s and the hydroxys and the methyls, and it's a really complicated diagram, and when you see it, it makes sense. Iodine affects that as well. Bridget wanted to know, can you get a TPO down to zero permanently with a correct treatment? I have seen it happen. I have seen people go off their medication and permanently, well, you know, if they go back on their bad habits, then it's going to come back. One of the doctors I studied with years ago said this autoimmune thyroid condition is not curable. And this was after he was telling all these wonderful stories. I said, what do you mean it's not curable? You're just telling us all these great stories. He goes, it's not curable. If they go back and start eating gluten again and get off of their supplements and, you know, start being stressed out again, it's going to come back. But as far as that's concerned, yeah, that you can't, somebody who has Hashimoto's can't go back and, you know, abuse their body and have the Hashimoto's not come back. It's probably going to come back. Yep. Yeah, and Bayari's saying that when she got her lab test done, she said she couldn't order some of these on the initial test because she can only order them if the first one showed signs of imbalance. But that's where conventional medicine is missing the boat, and functional medicine is able to do this. Now, unfortunately, Bayari lives in Australia where they don't have direct labs. And we're very fortunate to have direct labs that we can just, anybody can go and order their own tests. And you can get whatever you want. You don't have somebody have to tell you, well, your TSH is fine. We don't have to look further. Meanwhile, this person is suffering with thyroid symptoms. I want to get to the bottom of it. I want to help people. I don't want to just, like, give them a medication and give them a solution that says, well, it's not working. I don't know what the problem is. Maybe you need Prozac. Laura asked, what should be the ratio between reverse T3 and T3 or T4? I don't know the specific numbers. The reverse T3 is range of 90 to 350. So ratio-wise, you want them to be in the same you want it to be in the normal range. You don't want it to be elevated. So reverse T3 can go low. And actually, Wilson's temperature thing, in a nutshell, what he does is puts people on just T3, and it's this particular, you ramp it up, you ramp it down, and you keep doing that maybe two or three cycles, and it actually just kicks everything into gear, and the temperatures normalize, and then a lot of people are off thyroid medication after that permanently. But what it does is it uses up, when you take away the T4, it basically causes the reverse T3 and the T4 to go down practically to nothing, and it causes the T3 to be able to do its thing. And that's in a nutshell, and I'll give you more information on that at some point when we do our detailed thyroid course. Oh, good. Thank you, Bridget. She has the Wilson's Temperature Syndrome. Yeah, it's a great site. And on that site, if you want to go there and learn more about that syndrome and how he works with it, there's a free practitioner's ebook. It's not something you can print out because it's like you go there and you click on the different links to get into the pages. Lots of good information, though, in there. Yeah. Well, I'm saying, Debbie, if you need iodine for breast health, then you just have to see if you need iodine for breast health, it means you're deficient in it. It means that taking it for the breast health is not going to cause your autoimmune flare-up. I just don't believe it. The same seminar that I went with Dr. Wilson, there was another doctor speaking, and he spoke about what he called iodophobia. Iodophobia. You know, he said, we're too fanatical about this iodine thing lately. We're too phobic about it. And I have a huge array of studies and all that I can, you know, pull out. And I think I may have them online. Totally agree with all this stuff on the iodine. I just don't buy into that. Now, there may be some people who are sensitive to it, and it could flare up their Hashimoto's. So you tread cautiously with it. But I'm not a big fan of taking people off of iodine. There's too much evidence to say that they need it. Bayari has a question that says, Could you say how overactive thyroid Graves is often told to avoid iodine and iodine-rich foods, in fact, seaweed, but you may have heard different. Yeah, it's one of those broad generalizations. Graves is not necessarily caused by excess iodine. It really isn't. And I was just reading about that here. There was a, let's see if I can find it. It was in one of my books here. And it said it was on iodine. And he specifically was saying how rare that is, how really rare it is for iodine to cause Graves. Let's see. Iodine-induced hyperthyroidism. Iodine-induced hyperthyroidism is also called the Jod-Basedow effect. It occurs only in a very, very small fraction of individuals at risk. It occurs only in thyroid glands in which function is independent of TSH stimulation. It should not be construed as a reason for failing to treat iodine deficiency. Iodine-induced hyperthyroidism is an important disorder in areas of the world where dietary intake is high. This is not an area of the world where iodine intake is high. So, that's basically it. He has a little reference number 282 out of the thousands that he gives, but we can maybe look that up. So, yeah, I think iodophobia is a proper term. People get scared of iodine because, yes, indeed, like anything, excess is excess and can be damaging. But it's a matter of being so scared of developing an excess that we create a deficiency, and the deficiency can be just as bad or worse than the excess. So, yeah, Beverly says the bigger problem could be over-medicated with diet. Yeah, the thing is, yeah, and there's long-standing effects like reduced bone density, problems with the gallbladder, that come from long-standing thyroid supplementation, especially when it's not really very carefully controlled, and especially when it's just T4. And Dr. Karazian in his thyroid class went through tons of research. I have pages and pages of notes on just that effect. So you really do have to be careful. And you also have to be careful about over-radiating. They tell you not to take iodine, and then they're going to just zonk your thyroid and knock it out. So we don't have an excess of iodine unless you're actually taking too much as a supplement. We just don't have it in our food supply. So I don't think it's something to worry about. But, of course, you proceed with caution.